This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. Go to braintreepayments.com/whatthetech for more information. What the Tech? Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
You feeling better?
I don't know.
last week, you were so out of it.
Yeah.
It was like, that was the day you had to, like, was that the worst day? No, it was Tuesday. It was bad.
I can't remember.
I have a book of every time you're sick.
Yeah.
I have a diary. Today, Paul fell ill. Things were not good today.
Sure.
Hey, guys, we're going to have fun today. I have a lot to talk about. The Threshold 2, Update 2 is around the corner, right?
Yes, it is.
And very exciting stuff. Paul has a great post of what to expect on the website. There's an Xbox update on its way. I went through a total meltdown last week with building this new production machine that we're on today, which I want to tell the story about.
Yep.
And a bunch of other stuff. I actually wanted to ask Paul about something on TV, if he's watching it yet. We're going to talk a little bit about World War II today.
Oh, what is it?
The Man in the High Castle. Yeah, The Man in the High Castle. I am not. Okay, we'll talk about it. But before we do that, guys, I'm throwing paper here. I want to talk about our great sponsor, and that's Braintree. Guys, I know many of you are web developers, app developers, which I should talk to you guys because I need an Apple TV app. If anybody out there wants to help me out, please send me an email. A lot of you guys are developers, and a lot of you guys are business owners. One of my buddies here in New York, he has a pretty big brand, a clothing brand, and recently he contacted me, and he was asking me about Braintree because he heard me talking about it on the show, and he's actually in the beginning processes of implementing this into his mobile site, into his app to accept payments. What is Braintree? Braintree makes it very easy. It's a one-stop platform to accept all different types of payments, everything from PayPal to Apple Pay to Bitcoin, all different credit cards, all different types of currencies, and it has unbelievable fraud protection. What I mean by that is it generates a token, so the vendor never actually gets your credit card information. So when you see these gigantic breaches happening for companies like Target and Macy's, if there's a breach there, a couple of years ago they had one, it's because they're holding on to your information. These guys don't provide the information. So it's super, super safe, great customer service, and phenomenal fast payouts for anybody out there that's looking to, you know, get paid quickly from what they're accepting. Your first $50,000 transactions are fee-free. If you go to braintreepayments.com/whatthetech, that's braintreepayments.com/whatthetech. Great people, great site, and also people like Uber, Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Living Social, they're all accepting payments via Braintree. Braintreepayments.com/whatthetech. I want to thank Braintree for supporting the show and, of course, supporting the GFQ network. Paul, where do we begin here?
Let's not start off with a rant.
Yeah, I'm not. No. I'm going to save it later. I'm going to save the rant for later. Let's start off with what to expect with the update, with the fall update.
Did you just flip a coin?
I did.
Is that what I heard?
Yeah, that's how I decide everything in life. Are we going out today? Let's flip a coin.
That's funny.
Let's start talking about the fall update.
All right.
What are we going to expect, Paul? What should we expect?
Well, I mean, from an upgrade experience, it's going to be one of those updates that needs to reboot your computer. And ideally, you do this thing overnight, because if you've installed any of the Windows Insider builds, you may be familiar with that. What that looks like, it's like installing a full build. You know, it reboots into a screen with a round progress circle, and you know, it takes a little while, like half an hour or so. It's not really clear how they're doing it. I mean, it's going through Windows Update. I mean, I don't know if it's like a full build over build, you know, type of install like we did during Insider, but it's delivered like a cumulative update. It will take a little while, 20-30 minutes probably, and you know, when you boot into Windows 10 for the Windows 10, you know, version 15.11 or version, you know, Windows 10 with the fall update, however you want to refer to it, It will be mostly very familiar, you know, not, there's nothing dramatic changing. But you know, over the past, 3+ months, 4 months since Windows 10 RTM'd, there's been a ton of app updates. And so obviously all that stuff's in there. And then in the insider builds, what we've been seeing and what you will see in the fall update or in 15.11 is a bunch of just small tweaks everywhere, you know, fit and finish type stuff, the results of feedback, you know, why can't we do this kind of thing? And so, I mean, honestly, just installing it doesn't really change a lot day to day, but you can go in and do things like disable that background picture on the sign-in screen, which so many people complained about. You can add color to the windows now, where before in the original version of Windows 10, they were just white.
Which I like that. I like the blue, you know, the classic blue on the top.
You have a choice, right?
Yeah.
I think the cool thing about that is you can pick it, you know, however you want to do it. You know, the context menus, meaning when you right click on something in the UI, a lot of people had made fun of that before because in Windows 10, there were like 8 different versions of the menus. Now there's like 2. I mean, they're still not completely consistent, but the style is consistent, you know, the font, the size and all that kind of stuff. And so it's really just stuff like that. It's app improvements, which, you know, in some cases are fairly important, like in the Mail app has been updated significantly. The Groove app, the music app, has been updated many, many times. The Skype messaging, phone and video apps appear for the first time. So you don't necessarily need to go get the Skype, you know, desktop app if you just have basic Skype needs. Bunch of improvements to Edge, especially around syncing of items like favorites and reading list items and settings between computers, which is huge. Cortana improvements, that kind of stuff.
So what I saw here, and by the way, you have a great, very easy to understand. Here's what's new in Windows 10 Fall Update on therot.com. If you guys go there, I just pulled it up on the website while you were talking. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the device activation process. Yeah. Because this was my nightmare last week.
Yes.
I lived it. It's awful. If from 99% of people, if you have Windows 7 and you go to Windows 10 and you do your free upgrade, you're not going to have any issues. And most people, they're not buying a copy of Windows. Most people have an OEM copy. It's installed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is what it is. So here was my issue here.
Okay.
Clean install, right? Nothing on the hard drive. I built a computer. I got nothing on the hard drive. It's a brand new hard drive.
Yep. Yep.
So I have to put in my 7 disk. It has to be a full CD. It can't be an upgrade CD, guys. It has to be a full version of Windows. Install Windows 7, update to SP1, update to Windows 10.
Well, I mean, actually, you don't actually have to do any of that stuff. If you had never used the product key, and it's a retail version of Windows, full version, like you said.
Yeah.
I don't remember. You know, Windows 7 might have only been full. I don't remember how that worked anymore. Upgrade versus full. I can't even remember. But anyway. Assuming it was a full version. You technically, you know, according to Microsoft, I've not tried this, but it should just work. In other words, you should be able to do a clean install of Windows 10, paste in or write, you know, type in the key from Windows 7, and it should just work.
This is with the fall update.
With the fall update.
With the fall update. So that's right. I'm a couple days
early. Oh, gotcha. I'm sorry.
I'm a couple days early, Paul.
Yep.
If I had waited a week, my entire process would have been a lot easier. But so I put in 7, upgrade to SP1, updated to 10. So now what happened with that? That was fine. Whatever. It's a pain in the butt. You got to do double steps, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. I had to downgrade to 7.
Right.
Because AMD did an awful, awful job with writing their drivers, and it just does not work properly for me. And I had this awful buzz coming out of my my HDMI output of the audio. So what you guys are getting is an HDMI out signal from my video card to the encoding machine to my right here.
Yep.
It had like an awful staticky buzz. It's a driver problem. It has to do with the HDMI drivers that AMD has written. No fix. They don't know when they're fixing it. So I had to go back to 7. What would you say would make the most sense? How would I downgrade to 7?
Well, I mean, you have the disk?
I do have the disk, yeah.
Then That would be, you would install it with the disk.
Oh, that makes the most sense, Paul. But guess what? UEFI.
Okay.
It's UEFI, and for whatever reason, it does not recognize the disk at all.
So I would try using the Microsoft tool, whose name now escapes me, but I'll think of it in a second.
To create a USB. Yeah. I could have done that. That would have made the most sense.
I am once again bleeding because of shaving. I apologize.
you're like a pro wrestler in a bloodbath.
I don't know. I cut myself.
You cut yourself right on your forehead. Yeah. You know what you should do? Just smear it all over your face. Right. Makes you look a lot different.
Yeah, just put it under my eyes. Yeah.
So now what happened? I didn't create the disk. What I should have done was the USB method. That was my option. But I wanted to figure out how to fix this problem, right? Like, let's say you can't figure out how to do that. Like, if I'm just regular, I'm a regular person, what am I going to do? Windows at this point no longer recognizes the disk. I could put in any CD and it'll read it. It doesn't even acknowledge that there's a CD in the tray because of the way that the UEFI was set up. The way around this was I took my disk out. I took my hard drive out, put it in another computer, and at boot, I booted to the CD. And I formatted everything and I installed Windows, put it back into this machine.
Oh, and then let it find the new
hard drive. And then let it find the new hard drive.
That is an incredibly bad way to install Windows.
Or what I could have done, here was the other crazy thing that worked. If I swapped out the DVD drive to another DVD drive, it would recognize it.
Okay.
Right? Like, so all right. It was a bizarre thing. And again, this is not Windows' fault. This is the way that UEFI is. It's a little bit of a pain in the butt, but there's a way around it. This, on the other hand, the activation improvement is significant. I think this is going to make it really simple for most people to upgrade to Windows 10.
I honestly, it's kind of a failover, right? Because I think the expectation is that most people have some computer and it's running Windows 7 or Windows 8 or whatever. And they upgrade to Windows 10, and for some reason, it doesn't activate. And that gives them a way to do, if they have the product key, they can activate that way. The other instance would be the Microsoft promise, which is that if you do that upgrade once and then want to do a clean install, it should auto-activate. Your, computer is stored up in the cloud. There's nothing to worry about. And I've heard from many, many people who've done this, and it doesn't activate. And so the advice from Microsoft is no problem. It works just like it did before. Call Microsoft product support and we'll give you a phone activation. And then they do that and the people on the other end of the phone say, yeah, you can't do that. You're going to have to reinstall your old OS. And of course, a lot of these people have not done what I advise to do, which is have all the restore disks and everything ready to go so that you can actually get back to your old version of Windows. So this solves that problem. If rather than call Microsoft support, when you do a clean install of Windows, if you previously had some version of Windows 7, 8, 8, 1 on that machine, and have that product key, you can now install Windows 10 clean and use that old product key. And it will, again, I've not tested it. And certainly no one could support or test every possible scenario. But the word from Microsoft is at that point, you'll be all set because you'll be able to upgrade. It's really kind of a fail-safe. It's not really designed to be like the new way that we activate Windows 10, but it's designed to kind of solve this problem because a lot of people have problems activating.
Yeah, I think it's a great improvement. What do you think is going to be the takeaway from this? What do you think people are going to notice the most and say, well, wow, this is what we kind of wanted?
The takeaway from
this update
from the 15.11 update.
Yeah.
Well, I in many ways, this is what used to be called a Service Pack 1. In many ways, it is the thing that Microsoft intended to release as Windows 10 originally. Remember, they pushed the date back to July. It's not even quite that, to be honest, because they expected to have extension support in Edge, and now they're saying they won't have that till next year, probably in the next release, which is going to be, 16.06 or, whatever they call that. But I guess, if you've been holding off on Windows 10 for whatever reason, if you're the conservative type and you think, well, I want to wait for that first big update and, they give them a chance to fine tune things, let other people beta test it and find the problems and let Microsoft fix those problems, this is probably the release, right? I mean, there is no major, single major feature in it. There's no like one thing where you're like, wow, this really puts this thing over the top. But it's a bunch of little things all over the place that I kind of think does put it over the top. I mean, I thought the July release was great. But this is just little things, you know, everywhere that make it a little bit better. It's sort of like, you know, Windows 98 SE was back in the day. It's the same OS, you know, bunch of little improvements.
I think it's great. I mean, most people are not going to notice a big difference, but we're going to see, you know, for 90, it's just going to make things a little bit smoother.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what we want.
Yeah, you have 4 months of improvements to work off of. I mean, in some ways, the biggest stuff that's happened to Windows 10 is the apps. And that stuff most people have already seen because most of those app updates are already in the shipping version of Windows 10. You know, the mail app has been updated significantly. Edge has been updated, you know, with that syncing support. Lots of updates there. So that's cool. You know, if you wanted to, you could have downloaded the Skype apps, you know, if you even knew they existed. So it's really just a kind of a cumulative, you know, update of all that stuff coming in and into one thing. So, yeah, it's I think it's great.
Yeah, nice. I mean, it makes it a lot easier. Do we have a release date for this?
Not officially, but a lot of people have pointed to Thursday, which is the 12th.
Which is the same day.
Thursday the 12th, right, is also the same day that the Windows 10 update for Xbox One is coming out, the new Xbox One experience, right?
Yeah.
Which is the underpinning stuff, which improves the performance, new UI, which is really kind of cool looking, I think, and Xbox 360 game compatibility, not, you know, for every single game ever made, but first 104 games come out on Thursday or available on Thursday. That's going to be a big upgrade.
It was a humongous list. Yeah, it was a humongous list that I saw. So we're kind of looking at Thursday for this, but so that kind of goes into what I wanted to talk about next, and that was that Xbox update. Mm-hmm. This is a big deal for a lot of people, this update.
Yeah.
And I don't know what about this week. I think a lot of people did not realize it was coming out this week. But right. I got to ask by three people if there was any beta invites that I could get them.
Yeah.
And that's why I messaged you. I'm like, well, how does that work? He's like, there's no updates.
I guess they used to have invites, and I got in so late I never had access to them. But I guess they're long gone.
Yeah.
But by the way, I should say, you know, the invites aren't just for this one thing. It's what it really is an Xbox preview program, right? And so every month what you get is early access to updates that other people will get a month or two down the road.
A month or two down the road, yeah.
It was especially good to have during the past, I don't know, 3-4 months when we were testing this update. But, you know, throughout the existence of Xbox One and into the future, the people on the preview program will still have early access to other stuff. And there's stuff to come down the road that will be Windows 10 based, you know, Cortana support, and then eventually the App Store support where, you know, Windows 10 Universal apps will run on top of Xbox One. And presumably the people who are in the Xbox preview program, I think it's called, will be able to access those features early as well. So, you know, this update's coming out Thursday and that's, you know, okay, problem solved. But I mean, honestly, some people who really want to get going on pre-release software like that kind of thing would love to test this. It's kind of too bad they don't open it up to a bigger group than they have.
So what can you talk? Can you talk about this? What you've seen?
Yeah,
you
it's
like?
All open. There's nothing. To,
Okay. So what do you like about it?
Well, I mean, the first one is performance. You know, when I went from the Xbox 360 to Xbox One, the big thing I was looking for was UI performance. Because when you're playing a game on the Xbox 360, if you hit that middle, the Xbox button, the thing that looks like the Xbox logo on the controller, what happens is the Xbox guide comes up. And it interrupts what you're doing. The game, obviously a multiplayer game, continues behind there. But you don't get to play. And it's maddeningly slow on the Xbox 360. It takes a lot. It kind of comes up slowly, draws, sits there. And you're hitting back, get out. And, you know, meanwhile, back in the game, you're getting killed by someone or whatever's happening. It really brings the whole thing to a halt. And the intra-game or the intra-app experiences on Xbox 360 that what we might call the user interface, which was very slow. And I was really hoping when we went to Xbox One, because this thing's basically a supercomputer, it's a PC, they're going to fix that, obviously, because there's no reason for that stuff to be so slow.
Yeah.
To my horror and surprise, the Xbox One is possibly even slower But it's at least as slow as the Xbox 360 in that regard. So if you're playing a game on the Xbox One, hit that Xbox, you know, the Xbox button, the Xbox guide button, whatever it's called. You know, the guide comes up. It's a different experience on Xbox One. Man, it is just as slow, and it's like, you know, and there's other stuff that I don't do a lot, which also falls into this category.
Well,
you want to find
Xbox
your friends.
One also, multitasking is a big part of it, right? You're able to do all these things at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, within limits, right? I mean, yeah. Yes. And so they have overlays and things that, you know, you can snap things and run things side by side. I mean, the one big thing – someone else just posted this version thing. Thank you for the heads up. Yeah. The one thing you can't do, I'm sorry, is run. You can't run like two full-blown AAA titles side by side. You can't run Call of Duty Ghosts and Call of Duty Advanced Warfare.
I don't know why anybody would want to do that, but
I could see wanting to switch back and forth between them for some reason. Maybe you're comparing the you know graphic quality or you know who knows. There's honestly no legitimate reason for a normal person to do that. But in Xbox One, you know, there's this range of things you can do that you overlay on top of it or run side by side. So in the new Xbox One experience, the Xbox Guide is a different UI. It's an overlay. It slides in from the side. It's much faster than before. It's not instantaneous. It's still not exactly what I want. I mean, what I'm looking for is hit the button, it comes up, you do something, and you go. But it's much faster than before, much faster than the Xbox 360. And it also provides access to a bunch of things and really only to a bunch of things that you would want to do while in a game. You want to access your friends list because you want to invite people to a party or communicate with them in some way. You got a message and now you want to read it while the game is going on and maybe there's a spot where you can rest or whatever. It had, you know, quick settings, various things that make sense for while you're in the game. For me, it's more of I have fumble fingers, I've got huge hands, I'm a spaz and I'm hitting buttons fast and I hit that button by mistake and you know, the guide comes up. Now, in this case, it kind of comes up from the side. But however it comes up, and I want to get out of it. And I'm hitting B, you know, back, you know, like I want to get out. It's much faster than before. It's, not again, not instantaneous, but it's much faster than before. And so according to Xbox, we've talked to multiple times in recent days about this. I mean, there are two factors that go into making this faster than before. One is just the replacing of the Windows 8 underpinnings that was in the original Xbox One with Windows 10. Just the performance increase from that. And then the other one is just rewriting the UI so that it is more efficient. And so there's a new UI, just the dashboard UI as we think of it.
It's pretty. I mean, I'm looking at it now. It's a great looking UI.
But there's also like, you know, these overlay type UIs, which includes but is not limited to this Xbox Guide interface, right, which is now like an overlay. And I guess just by virtue of overlaying it the way they're doing it, it's a big performance advantage as well.
Has there been any kind of any more information regarding universal apps? And now that they're on the same platform now, so how is that going to work?
So that's not available in this initial release. They're kind of putting Windows 10 into Xbox in stages. So the first one, it, you know, makes sense. It's the underpinnings. Let's just get that going. Yeah. The next step is, I believe, is going to be Cortana, adding that support. And so we already have Hey Xbox or whatever it's called. I say it all the time and I can't remember what I say to it. I guess you just say Xbox and then whatever, you know, Xbox, record that or whatever. I'm looking at the Kinect like it's going to answer my question. What do I say to you all the time? Stupid piece of junk in the corner. I use it every day. I have no idea how it works. So replacing the basic command structure that's available in that voice control of the Kinect with Cortana, which is far more powerful and more general and will do everything it does today plus a lot more. It will work with a remote, you know, a headset that you might connect to your controller. You don't require the Kinect anymore. That's fantastic. And then after that, the next thing will be Xbox compatibility with universal apps. And I don't have a time frame for that, but sometime next year.
So here's some of the things. People have noticed that the messages are easier to access. The friends list is a lot faster. Yeah. It's just overall just improvements.
All that stuff is in that guide. Yeah. In other words, the thinking is you're in a game and you want to do so. There are things that you want to do in a game that are not the game. Communicate with other people, either because you're just chatting or because you're at a game party or you want to get them into a game party. Whatever those things are, that's what's in the guide. So it's all, you know, big right there. And that's all nicely done. I think they did a really nice job with that.
There's no graphical improvements at all with gaming itself, right? With this update? Are you going to
see
any?
No, it's not. Yeah, like they went to 4K or something.
No, I mean, just no. Better overall, you know.
Well, I mean, remember on the Xbox 360, when that thing first shipped, it was 720p. And one of the supposed limitations was they'll never be able to do 1080p. Actually, I think maybe it was... Actually, maybe they never did 1080p. I don't remember. I think they did 1080i first and then maybe 1080p later. I don't remember how they did the upgrade. But they were able to upgrade the Xbox somehow, the Xbox 360, to support these different resolutions. And, of course, most games aren't 1080 anything.
Yeah, the later ones, because initially it was the Xbox 360 was a component, right?
Was what?
When the Xbox 360 came out, the original white one, it was a component. It was a component cable. So you could only do 1080i.
Oh, I got you.
So
I
when
got
they, when
oh,
they,
oh, okay.
I think like okay. The next generation, you know, when they put out the second yep. version of it and they put the HDMI in the back, that was 1080p.
Okay. But I mean, the Xbox when it, 360, when it first shipped was 720p. It wasn't even 1080i. Like they actually upgraded over time. Now, I don't think Xbox One goes from this to 4K unless there's some external video solution that I'm unaware of coming down the, you know, down the pike. But there's nothing like that. I mean, obviously the user experience of the dashboard has changed. It's less panorama, although there's still some, you know, left-right component to it. And there's more up-down, which I think is more familiar to people from the web and computers. It's more of a typical way to navigate for content. I think it's really attractive, and maybe more to the point, it's easier to use, and it's quicker to get to the stuff you care about. When you have to kind of get over the fact that some things are different. If you used the pins list before, which was a bunch of tiles over the left, that stuff's actually really, it's down in the bottom now. And so that, you know, if you're used to just like clicking left once and seeing it, you know, your initial reaction might be like, man, it's really far out of the way. But one of the little shortcuts you can do is now is if you're familiar with the way the controller works and how the UI navigation is, you might know that you can use the bumpers to go left and right between screens.
Yeah.
But now you can use the triggers to go up and down. And so to get to your pins, you just right trigger one time and you're right there. You know, it's real quick. So it's actually just as quick. It's still one button. It's actually further away in the UI. But because of the way they designed it, you click it once and you're there. And it's, you know, and once you do it, you're like, yep, yeah, this is great. It works really nice.
So, someone in the chat mentioned this, and I kind of agree with them. The hope is that they'll announce it at next year's build that development will be open for universal apps.
I think that's a reasonable time frame.
You know what? That'll be the day. I'll start cheering, and it'll be like an Apple event for me. That's the day I've been waiting for.
I talked to them about that, and I don't know if it was Mike Ybarra or I don't remember who I talked to about this, but somebody told me that, you know, it's not going to be like releasing apps on the web like anyone can do it. I mean, it's almost not going to be like the Windows Store either on Windows 10. You don't just make an app and get in, right? I mean, this is Xbox, right? This is the living room. It's not a computer. It's not this thing that's designed to do a bunch of different stuff. You know, this is an Xbox. It's games and entertainment. And, you know, if you have a little RSS reader app that you wrote for Windows Phone or something, you're not just going to get into the Xbox store. I mean, you have to pass a certain bar of quality and also of kind of applicability. Like it has to make sense on the Xbox. And so, you know, obviously what you're thinking about is, you know, an app for your network of podcasts. And that's that type of thing they would, of course, allow. But, I mean, Joe Blow with his Hangman app or... you know, whatever the notepad reader or whatever that stuff's not, you're not going to see that on Xbox.
But you know what? You don't know that. Do we know that for sure that we're not going to start seeing, you know, so it's still going to be a select group of people able to develop the app. They're not going to open it up.
No, anyone could do it. I mean, but it has to be a certain kind of app. It's not, they are going to open it to anyone. You as an individual, if you wrote a good enough app, it has to meet the criteria. It's not just quality. It's pertainability to the platform, right? I don't know if you've looked at Apple TV yet, but there are some apps that are on there. I think because they're major properties like TripAdvisor, that I actually don't think are very good apps for the TV. Like it just doesn't. The TripAdvisor app is basically like photo slideshows of locations. It's garbage. It's a waste of time. But it was clearly made, you know, but it's made by a, you know, a AAA company that everyone cares about and wants to see. Airbnb is an example of an app that might be make a little more sense because you can do like a virtual, not so much a walkthrough, but like a, you know, a VR 360 degree turn inside of a room and get a real good look at an apartment. And that's actually not a bad way to do Airbnb, you know, to book something and find out more about a place before you go there. And then you say, okay, well, that one kind of makes sense. I think on Xbox One, you're going to see, obviously, tier one titles. I mean, would TripAdvisor get into Xbox One with the app that I see on Apple TV? I actually don't think they would, regardless of who they were. But if you, as an individual, went to Xbox and said, hey, I got this app developed for guys from Queens, and it was good enough, I think that one would get in. I don't think you have to worry about that.
I don't know about that because... Okay. I don't know about that. I don't know if I'm
tired of you doubting my word.
Well, you know, okay, so like with Roku, when we talk about Roku development, Roku pretty much, as long as you follow their guideline, it's open for everybody.
Yep.
Paul at the Rock could have an app, and I could have an app, and my dog could have an app, as long as it fits their form factor of what the application could look like.
Okay. Yep.
When you're talking about the Xbox, do they still – because I still think they have the mentality that it's a premium service. It's not just like the set-top box. It's a premium service that you're paying for, and they consider apps a little differently. It's kind of more like how Apple used to consider apps.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're Apple or Microsoft or Google – and you have this general purpose computing platform. It's Windows, it's Android, it's iOS. It's Apple TV to a lesser degree. It's watchOS to a lesser degree. It's Windows Phone, right? Basically, as long as the app doesn't break anything and follows the basic rules, I think anyone gets in. I think, you know, it's, you know, you pass the test and you get in. It's no big deal. The bar is at a certain place, but the developer environments are set up so that when you write apps, they work to that, you know, spec. Usually, no problem. You get some farting apps. You get some, you know, Hangman apps. You get RSS reader apps, whatever. You know, the Xbox One is a different thing. It's a really curated environment. I'm trying to find in my notes, I can't find the part where you talked about this. And it's designed for very specific scenarios in the living room only, right? Gaming, obviously, and entertainment. Now, when you think about entertainment apps, by nature, a lot of those things are going to be AAA, tier one things. They're going to be HBO Go. They're going to be Hulu Plus, Netflix, whatever. That stuff already exists. I mean, the point of opening up the App Store to Windows 10 developers is twofold. I mean, twofold. One is to get those big guys to be able to write one app and have it work everywhere. And that is the thing that floats all boats, right? That maybe Netflix already made they already have an app everywhere. Netflix is a bad example. But let's pretend that for some reason Netflix already had an Xbox One app, but they didn't do Windows 10 for PCs and tablets.
Okay.
And they didn't do Windows Phone. Now they can just do that. It's like, it's not quite just checking boxes in a dialogue.
But it's as close as you could possibly get to it.
Yeah. And maybe they support. So that's one thing. But the other half of it is enthusiasts. It's individuals. Because sometimes the next big thing, whether it's like an Angry Birds kind of game or whatever, comes from a single person or a really small company with a small team of people that just for whatever reason creates this thing that is so awesome that everybody wants it. And they want to have the opportunity to at least allow that. I mean, I don't know the exact figures. I think we talked about this at some point. But before this, to develop for the Xbox One or for any Xbox was like a $100,000 investment. You needed to sign non-disclosure agreements. You had to get a special version of the console. You know, there was all this rigmarole.
Yeah.
This is Visual Studio, a free version of Visual Studio could potentially target Xbox One. Someone could learn about programming on an Xbox One, you know, using a PC, obviously, with a Visual Studio. You never know. And it really is that. But now, what they don't want is 11,000 fart apps and Hangman apps and RSS readers.
Yeah.
You know, they are going to curate it. But this really does open up the possibility of, at the very least, what you see on Roku, right, which is a bunch of entertainment experiences, but some of them are okay, and some of them are, you know, photo slideshows, you know, whatever.
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly. I mean, you have like, you know,
there's a lot of that stuff.
Church TV Live, and then you got, you know, HBO Go. So obviously, it's a big difference.
On Roku. I looked at some travel apps, and there's I don't want to call these people. It doesn't really matter who they are, but there's some company that makes like travel apps for you know, France and for Spain and for other countries. And so you install them and you put them on your screen and you rerun them. And what it really is just a front end to short YouTube videos that some individual or a couple or some group of five people separately all made of, you know, and they're walking around with their handy cams or their GoPros or their iPhones for all I know.
Yeah.
And they're making their own homegrown version of a professional travel show. And it's pretty terrible, but they're on Roku. And if you want to watch them, you know, they're there. I mean, is that going to get on Xbox One?
Or like how many fireplace apps are we going to get?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, that's
aquariums.
Yeah, aquariums and fireplace.
The Christmas thing, you know, lights or something for Christmas.
The U-Log.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
On Amazon, when I first got the Amazon Fire TV, that was literally like the only app that you could download. It was like five U-Log apps. A fireplace app. There was one that it was like snowing, rain.
Yeah.
It's like $4 for that stupid app. And people buy it, you know? Think about it. There's a fireplace app somewhere that the guy made $1 million off sure. of. That's unbelievable.
I honestly think that there's a bunch of things that I think happen over the next year that are going to make the Xbox One more viable in the living room. I mean, like right now, you want to stick something under your TV and watch a bunch of HD channels or whatever content. You know, Apple TV makes a lot of sense. The Amazon Fire TV makes a lot of sense. Roku makes a lot of sense. Xbox One, it's like, you wouldn't buy it for that. You would buy it because you are a big game player. This is a big thing for you. And you may want to do this other stuff. With, you know, in other words, you might do the game by yourself, but then your girlfriend comes over and you watch, you know, a movie or something. If they can get Xbox down to a smaller form factor, quieter form factor, less expensive form factor, and potentially have a version of the console that is not for the Xbox One games, but just for the entertainment experiences, fanless, smaller, cheap, I think they're onto something. That's something I personally want. But I think that's something that happens next year. And maybe part of it is these apps show up from Windows 10. And now you have a more of an experience to offer people.
I'm curious if, you know, what's going to – we talk about the living room all the time. And is the Xbox the ultimate living room set-top box? Is it Roku? Is it Apple? Is it Amazon? Is it Google? You know, like which one has the advantage here? And I – obviously, the Xbox has the advantage if you're looking to play games, but I don't know if any of them has an advantage over the other one. Right. I guess it's whatever ecosystem that you're in as the end user. Yes. That's the advantage that exists. So if you're in the Apple ecosystem, that's what you're going to use.
Somebody asked me this morning on Twitter, if you were going to recommend a service to buy movies on, which one would you use?
Yeah.
You're like, geez, really? I mean, there's so many questions you have to ask yourself, and you have to really think about the future, and there's no way to really know how the future is going to go. I mean, you can cross certain ones off the list if you use Windows Phone and think you're going to be using Windows Phone. There's a lot of choices you can cross right off the list. But if you do that and buy a bunch of movies from, say, Microsoft service, and then, you move to Android or something, those movies don't play on Android or on iOS. And so these decisions are very difficult. You know, platform, the lock-in thing that people talk about with iOS in particular, but with any platform, Android, Windows, whatever, is very serious. And it's fraught with expensive mistakes. You know, you don't want to spend $1,000 on movies.
Well,
I don't want to do that.
Well, that's the problem, right? I mean, right now, I'll tell you something. I never bought television shows and movies, right? Like I always used to just watch whatever was on Netflix or whatever was on Roku, and that's how I used to do it. I'm sorry, Netflix or Hulu or whatever else. One of my favorite shows, it's so dumb, but the show Good Eats.
Good Eats?
Yeah, it's a Food Network show.
The Alton Brown show?
Yeah. I love that show.
Oh, yeah. So I mean, it's long off the air, though. I mean, it's been
off the air for years, but... Yeah. You know, and I, when Jess and I started dating, we used to watch that all the time. We used to get loaded, ordering food and watch Good Eats. And like I would DVR
one being the fried turkey episode where he actually blows up
that one
drops it into the oil from like 2 feet up.
Oh, that's phenomenal, that one.
Yeah.
So I started buying them on Amazon through my Amazon Fire. I started buying like the seasons. So I'm going back, you know, like I haven't seen a lot of the older ones. So I'm going back because they stopped airing it when HD came. They wanted everything in, you know, 4:3 in 16:9. So they stopped airing that on Food Network, and they only put like the first, like the last 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, whatever seasons it was. Mm-hmm. So I started buying them. I have like 7 seasons worth now. If I moved over to Apple, guess what? I can watch that on the Apple TV.
Well, okay, actually you could.
I could.
It would just be complicated because the Amazon, if I think, the Amazon Video app is available on iOS, isn't it?
On iOS? Yes. Mm-hmm. But not
so that
on...
means you could use AirPlay to put it up onto your Apple TV.
Yeah, I could do it that way. I could AirPlay. No,
I'm not saying it's seamless. I mean, I have purchased a bunch of content on every service. And so I've got some stuff in Microsoft stuff, Amazon, Google, iTunes. I got a lot of stuff in iTunes. And that makes it complicated because, you know, you're like, okay, I know I bought, you know, the Star Wars movies or whatever. And, you know, where is that again? You know, or whatever. I mean... So it's no good solution. I don't see movies and TV shows going the way that music did, where it just becomes open and you can use it anywhere. And I think for, you know, different types of things, it makes sense to, you don't have a choice, right? You're buying these TV shows on purpose. I buy TV shows because I like a show and I missed an episode.
Yeah.
And I'll just buy the episode and I want to catch up on it. Or I'm trying to think of the name of the show. There's a French, we watch a bunch of French and British TV shows. And there's a French TV show. I think it's called like Les Revenants or like the Returned or something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's on some channel we don't get. So I actually bought the previous season. I think I saw the previous season on Netflix and then I bought the current season on iTunes because rather than pay cable for this channel I'm never going to watch anyway.
Yeah, you just might as well buy the show.
Yeah, so you know what I mean? I'll do this kind of one-off things. And so if you were to look in my iTunes account, at my TV shows, it would be this random assortment of individual shows from various, you know, TV series, and then full series occasionally of something. Like I didn't have Showtime for a while, but I wanted to watch season 3 of Dexter. So 10 years ago, whenever that was, I bought that season on iTunes for some reason. Yeah. I don't even remember why. I don't know.
So for me right now, I have a very difficult time if I were to. And this is actually one of the reasons why I don't want to get I haven't bought the new Apple TV because I got so caught up in the ecosystem on Amazon. I don't want to let it go because I have all these shows now on Amazon. I've been buying Good Eats. I've been buying other shows. Yeah. I've been buying a lot of, you know, like all my Archer stuff is on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think most of Archer, except for the most recent season, is on Netflix. Which is the other thing.
Yeah.
Like we've been paying for Netflix forever. I will buy certain shows and then you watch it appear, it just appears on Netflix and you're like, God damn it. You're like,
the other thing, the pro with, so I guess, you know what? I guess I could watch Archer. You know why? Because there's an FX app on Apple TV.
But how stupid is it? So the thing you just said though, you have to know what channel it's on
and what show,
whether there's an app on the thing that's just dumb. Yeah. You sit down in front of your TV and you're like, I want to watch Archer, and now you have to do the work of, okay, it's on the FX channel, so I know there's an FX app. Yeah. But I like, that's just
like season 1 through 5 is on Netflix, and then if I go to Hulu, I could watch, you know, 6, 7. And then season 8 is on the FX app.
Like The League is a show like this, which, you know, they move stations. They were on FX, and now they're on FXX, whatever the hell that is. And, you know, I record the new season. I hate watching shows week to week. But, you know, I think The League is probably, I believe they added the last season to Netflix very recently. But I watched that one, like, live, you know. So I think seasons 1 through whatever are available on Netflix, and then the new season is... you know, live.
So since we're talking about Amazon and shows, I want to take a moment. I want to talk about The Man in the High Castle.
Yes.
I am shocked that you have not seen this show yet.
I am too. I just forwarded this information to my wife because she'll sure. You know, we always sit down in front of the TV like, what do you want to watch? I don't know.
So Amazon broke my heart because they only put 2 episodes up.
Oh.
And the third one goes on, I think, like in like a week and a half.
So they're actually doing the...
I don't know how they're going to do it. I'm a little confused on how they're releasing this because they put episode 1 up like over the summer. And then they just put up episode 2. But I don't think the season begins till the end of November. I think they just like did like a preview of the first 2 episodes. I don't know if they're November 20th. I don't know if they're going to dump all of them or they're going to release them weekly.
Releasing anything weekly online is...
crazy.
The dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, but is it? Like, I mean, is it dumb?
I think it is.
I don't know. Like I don't know where I stand with this because I'm a big fan of binge watch. Like, Jess loves to binge watch, but it removes the buzz from the show.
No, you don't listen. We watch TV every night. And I don't mean we watch like 8 hours of TV. We watch a couple of hours of TV every night. And, you know, Sunday night is, you know, Walking Dead. And I think we watched The Affair probably after that. And then, you know, Homeland is on Sunday night, but we can't watch that till Monday night. There's a couple of nights a week where we have specific things that we're going to watch. And even if God help you, if a show skips a week, but even week to week, any of these shows that I just mentioned, we'll be watching the show. And I'll pause it and I'll be like, who's that guy? No idea. Nope, no idea.
No idea.
And then you have to kind of look at, or the other thing we've been doing recently is we watch a show. We're like, okay, we think we understand, you know, blah, 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 whatever. The New York Times recently has been recapping TV shows the next morning in the paper. And I read them, you know, I read them electronically. So I've actually started reading their recaps of the shows that I watch. Every single time there's information in this episode that neither one of us had caught while watching it.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you know, and so I think the primary benefit of watching a show back to back to back like that, you know, jamming it all in at once, is that it's fresh in your head, and you can kind of keep track of it. There were shows that went off the rails, like Lost was a really good example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they get so complex, and there's so many
and
people
you follow it. Yeah,
and then they go and the Walking Dead does this, like they'll focus on two characters 1 week, these three characters the next week, these three other characters. And then they reference something that what, you know, we're talking 4 or 5 weeks ago, and you're like, wait, what happened to this guy? Like, it just, I have a limited capacity, either through age or dementia or, you know, who knows, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I honestly, given the option, I would choose the ability to watch every episode of a season back to back every time.
I'm one of the few people, I would say no, I would rather have it, you know, week after week, because it keeps me coming back. As a content creator, I would say that that's the best way to get people committed to what you're doing. As a content consumer, you want to watch it whenever you want to watch it, and that's how you're going to do it. So right. I don't know which way is the right way to do it. I don't know what Amazon is doing. If you guys know in the chat,
well, by the way,
yes, yes.
Sorry, I lost you there for a second. I kind of glitched. I can tell you what's going on with The Man in the High Castle.
What's going on?
Episodes 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Which are available now.
Which were phenomenal. Very good.
All episodes of the first season will be available starting November 20th.
Oh, man. 10 days.
Yep.
Okay, so a little before... I'm not going to give away anything. I mean, what's there to give away? You've read the book.
Yeah.
I've read the book, too. And the book is a lot darker. And they haven't really explained a lot of, like the awfulness that the book has when it comes to like the Nazi regime, the Nazi part of the U.S.
Oh, did they do bad things? I don't.
They horrible things.
I see.
Like there's one scene. I guess I'll ruin it. Like that one of the guys he's driving. I don't know. I can't remember this in the book actually. One of the guys he's driving. You know, a car, and he blows out the tire, and he gets outside, and it's like all this dust falling, and he asks the cop. He's like, "What is this?" He goes, "Oh, it's Tuesday. We burned the cripple and the homosexuals and the Jews, we just burn them all on Tuesdays." And they just went over that. Like, oh, yeah, of course, that's what you do on a Tuesday. But that's the world that they're living in. At first, I was like, how did that's like really poorly done. They didn't even go into details, but that's the world that they're living in. And it's totally normal for them to kind of go over it as like, oh, this is what we do. I'm curious if they're going to go into like the awfulness. And a couple of the things that I read, they said, yeah, it's going to get really dark really quick after the first two episodes. So I'm kind of hoping that they stay true to the book.
I mean, this alternate history thing is so awesome.
I love that. Oh, man. This is my thing. I really like the what ifs.
Yeah.
Like, what if this happened and this didn't happen? And this is a really thought out what if, this book, The Man in the High Castle. It's on Amazon, guys. I mean, you could buy this book. There's an audible version of it. I highly, highly suggest it's one of the better ones. Fatherland is great too, but this is one of the better ones in my opinion because it goes into great detail.
Fatherland is a great book, but the sort of TV movie.
Oh, the HBO movies was awful. Who is it? Joe Kennedy's president.
It's not big enough. You know, it's just that. Anyway, sorry.
But the man in the High Castle, from this is what I remember from the book, and you tell me if I'm wrong, right? You read it a while ago, mm-hmm. I'm sure. It hasn't been recent.
Yeah.
They go into all this detail about Europe, what's happening in Europe, and Australia is now conquered by the Japanese and all of Asia. There's one country in the world that has not been changed. Do you know what country that is?
No.
Nothing has it's almost like they're in their own alternate universe.
I hope it's Switzerland, but no, I don't remember.
Canada.
Canada.
Nothing is different. Canada's Canada.
I always knew those guys would screw us over the first chance they got.
Yeah. Canada has not been conquered. They don't ever do anything with Canada. The only thing that you hear about Canada is that it's Canada.
It's Canada.
Like, oh yeah. Canada, and I'm thinking, Canada. Why wouldn't these people just go to Canada?
Yeah, there's nothing there.
Go to Calgary. Hang out in Calgary. Sure. Hang out in Winnipeg. Sounds amazing, but it's a very good series, Paul. You know what? You should watch that tonight. I've been dying to talk to you about this. This is like, you know what it is? This is like the book club. I have this book club, and Paul's supposed to talk about it. I'm supposed to talk to Paul. Paul's part of my book club, and guess what? Paul's the only one that hasn't read this book.
Okay.
You're ruining my book club.
Well, I'll tell you what. I am going to watch this. It's just a question of, do I watch the first two? Because the problem is, I know I'm going to like this. And if I watch the first two and I have to wait 10 more days, I'm going to be in a very bad
place. So the first episode goes into the character building and who it is. The second episode is really quick. Like, it happens. You're like, that's it? It's over? It's been an hour? How? Yeah.
I'm tempted to listen to the audiobook first.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I kind of want to do that now, actually. Is it on Audible? Let me see.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There are books that are, you know, big enough. Like, if you've read the books like Game of Thrones, it's really interesting. Or The Walking Dead, which, in book form is like a graphic novel or series, a big, big series of graphic novels. It's really interesting to, when you have an understanding of the original story, to see what changed. And, you know, you can sort of understand in some cases narratively why they might have changed things or slipstream things or whatever. I'm wondering if it's worth it in this case. I'm curious. Because obviously, if this thing is successful and they go multiple seasons, at some point they're going to get through the story of the book.
What year was the book written? I think it was 65, right?
Oh, I don't even know.
I think it was 1965.
62.
No, it takes place in 62.
Okay.
I know that for a fact because they said in the beginning, it's 1962. Okay. It's 20 years, 20 years have passed. I think he wrote it in 65, but what's amazing is that he's pretty accurate when it comes to technology, and he does this interesting thing because the Germans didn't lose the war. They're so far ahead technologically
in
1962 than
where they would have enslaved the planet.
Yeah, I mean, just the things that they, you know, like the technology aspect to it is mind-blowing because they're showing it's almost like 20 years ahead. And the explanation that he gives is like, listen, they never lost the war. So all this information wasn't stopped. All this development wasn't stopped. They just continued doing it.
Sure.
Which is pretty cool. I thought that was really cool because it's, technically it's a sci-fi book, right? It's science fiction. And I absolutely love it. I'm really hoping that you watch it like tomorrow or tonight.
All right.
Yeah.
I probably will be unable to resist.
Yeah. I'm getting the high sign. Time to wrap it up, Wagner says, because I have my meeting. I like this. Okay. I like it when the chat tells me what I have to do and what I don't.
Would you please, listen, I'm watching a show. Could you please stop?
Yeah, it's time, guys. Come on. You got your meeting. I got like 5 more minutes. I could go. Yeah. So I'm done. This machine is built now. And I'm on Windows 7. I'm going to wait a couple months before upgrading, but everything seems to be good so far. So good. Nothing is blowing up in my face right now.
This is on Windows 7.
This was the first show I recorded, so if I have no audio or if it's messed up, guess what?
Yep,
I screwed up everything.
We just talked about nothing.
Yeah, well, I have a backup recorder happening, so just in case. Therot.com, all things Paul. Great site. You're in New York on Thursday.
Well, that's true.
We're going to hang out.
That's true.
What are we doing? Gonna go see a play.
As always.
You know what? What?
Yeah, we're gonna go right. We're gonna catch a Broadway show.
We're gonna get a
petty and a Manny.
Manny and a petty, and then we're gonna come home and we're gonna watch The Man in the High Castle together, snuggled up on the couch, exactly, eating popcorn. You know what? That would be the greatest day ever. I meet Paul in the city. We have a quick lunch.
What we need
lunch.
Is like a montage of our day, like set to the theme from like the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, we're wearing like pajama pants and we're just on the bed and Jess opens the door and she comes in. She's like, what the hell's going on? And we both go, hi, honey.
And we just go running like raccoons caught in the trash. You know?
Oh, that'll be awesome.
Yep.
That'll be awesome. Yep. I'm being told, Andrew, come to London.
Yeah.
It'll be a great event. I would love to go to London.
You know, we're going to London in a couple of weeks.
I know. I know you're going in a couple of weeks. I would have loved to go to London.
10 days. Yeah. Next a week from Friday, we're having a meetup in Mary Jo and I in London. That's going to be interesting.
It'll be awesome. You're going to have a lot of fun. Have you been to London before, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My dad lived in London. I mean, he was there for 7 or 8 years. So we spent a lot of time in London.
Jess has done a lot. You know, I've never been to Europe.
Oh, my God.
Every time Jess travels to Europe, I can't go for whatever reason. There's something
you gotta figure that
up.
Out. I can't believe I ever come home from Europe.
Yeah, she loves it. I mean, she's been all over the place. She goes. Yeah. Poland is one of our favorite places to go now.
Yeah, I know, that's funny. I've never been to Poland.
Yeah, she
once,
loves but... it. She does like the whole thing. Like she practically lives there. She knows what to do and everything. It's actually amazing.
If someone would just pay me to live in Europe, I would.
So when
do
are you going? You're going after Thanksgiving or before?
No, before it's so I'm going next week. Actually, it might be a week from today. Let me look at my calendar. Yeah, next Tuesday night. Actually, Tuesday afternoon. Is it really that early?
Let me see.
Yeah, 6:30 Tuesday night I go. I'm going to Manchester.
So next Tuesday.
Yeah, a week from today.
Oh, so what are we doing next week?
I don't know. We got to figure that out.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do something Monday.
Yeah, maybe Monday we'll do it.
And then, so Manchester, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or well, actually Wednesday, Thursday. And then Friday, we're taking the train to London and we're having our meetup on Friday night. And then Saturday, my wife's flying in and then we're going to spend the weekend. We're going on like a beer
crawl. She's coming. Oh, that's great.
Yep.
I didn't know she was going.
Yeah. Yep.
Because I was there when you made the phone call.
Yeah.
And you said, hey. Yeah, yeah. What do you think
this,
of me going?
This could happen, yeah. What do you think?
Just running this by you, what do you think? She's like, yeah, why wouldn't you go?
Yep. Yeah, so awesome. She is. So that's good, yeah.
Awesome. Well, that is it for today, guys. Go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Subscribe to the show, guys, please. Video, audio, SD version, mobile version. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Subscribe to us. We also have a YouTube channel trying to make it easy for everybody. You can just watch it on YouTube. We post the show within a couple hours from this recording. It's on therot.com. It's on GFQ's website. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarin. Of course, you can follow Paul at The Rot tomorrow. You're going to be doing another podcast. You have your other podcast.
Yeah, I do have.
No, but I guess I'm the other podcast.
That's true.
I came after. Windows Weekly with Mary Jo Foley and Lee Laporte every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Eastern on the Twit Network. One of my favorite shows because Paul's on it. I watch everything Paul does.
That's creepy.
Yeah, I do. I watch everything he does. Everything. All right, guys. That's it for this week. If you're watching this live, there's no bonus show this week. I have to go to a meeting. A very, very important meeting that I have to
go
to.
That's good. That means I can go take a nap.
Now you could go and take a nap. I apologize for that, and I'll make it up next week, I promise. All right, guys. Take care.